There are different generations of technology that happen all the time. And we have pinned ourselves on the start of cloud adoption, which, you know, started in the early 2000s. There's different phases of that. When it comes to thought leadership for these services firms that want to be a leader in this next generation of technology, they have to show how they are doing things differently internally using a lot of these technologies.
If you really want to know what's going on in the fast-growing cloud services space, you need to speak with Michelle Swan, a 20-year-plus veteran of the tech and tech services sectors. Michelle is CMO and partner at Tercera, an investment and advisory firm that helps emerging tech services providers deliver on the promise of the so-called third wave of cloud computing. Tercera typically takes minority stakes in the range of 15 and 50 million. Simply put, the cloud's third wave pivots around component technologies used to create digital experiences that connect and engage customers and employees in unprecedented ways. Thought leadership is an essential component of the counsel that Tercera provides, and Michelle is smack dab in the middle of it. Not only does she help portfolio companies develop their own thought leadership, but she oversees Tercera's corporate thought leadership initiatives. Michelle and I will discuss a number of topics, including why tech services companies overall struggle with thought leadership, the role thought leadership plays in separating third-wave cloud computing leaders from laggards, the mechanics of creating powerful thought leadership and the methods for measuring its impact, how Tercera helps portfolio companies to create and merchandise thought leadership, and last but not least, the future of thought leadership in tech services in the age of generative AI and beyond. So, Michelle, thank you for joining us in Everything Thought Leadership. Let's dive right in. So here's a perplexing issue for me, at least, having spent many years in the IT services space. We at Boudet Thought Leadership Partners study the attitudes of providers of thought leadership across industries. And surprisingly, we found that IT services executives that we surveyed value thought leadership much less than those who we polled in other industries, which was a mind blower for me. Yet, you know, when we surveyed consumers of thought leadership related to IT services, they said they found it highly valuable. And in fact, they use it heavily to inform their decisions to purchase and to partner with IT services companies. And this includes companies that are in the cloud services space. So, you know, I look at that and then I look at what's being produced by the business. And I see that a lot of lackluster attempts to produce thought leadership. You know, I call it marketing collateral masquerading as thought leadership. What's out there is really bland. It's me too. It often lacks real evidence that these companies practice what they preach and can deliver the benefits that they tout. So, long-winded way of saying, why do you think IT services companies really struggle with thought leadership?
It is really interesting, to be honest. Because I think if there was ever an industry that needed thought leadership, it's probably services, especially IT services, where everybody sounds a little bit the same. And it's not as easy to differentiate because there's no hard, tangible thing. And you can't parade your people out for, you know, every single thing out there. I don't know. I guess I maybe chalk it up to three different things. I think one of them is probably the executives themselves. I think most of the people who found or CEOs of IT services companies tend to have come from a consulting background. And so, which is interesting because I think to be a great consultant, you have to be able to tell a story, but maybe it's just not at scale. And they don't have that background of having really strong marketing, which tends to be where a lot of the thought leadership sits within IT services and even product companies, for good or bad there. But I think that also goes to probably the second piece, which is services companies just don't have big budgets. You know, they don't have the big giant marketing teams that a lot of product companies do. You know, we talk to hundreds of different services companies every year as investors. We get to look at their data. We see what they spend on marketing. And it's definitely at the lower end of spend compared to product companies. So I think that's part of it too. They just don't have the resources.
Outside of Accenture, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of zero-based marketing that goes on in this space.
Yeah, they're like, well, let's squeeze. I mean, we've got people who can be out there selling. And in a lot of cases, they actually do. And they've been able to grow to a certain point too without having a big marketing team or thought leadership. And so they think they can keep that going. But at some point, that falls down.
Very true. So you guys work with a lot of smaller emerging firms in the cloud services space. And as you point out, they probably have smaller budgets than the tier one companies that are out there. So how do you advise them to really focus on their thought leadership spend so they can get the biggest bang for the buck?
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. I think don't separate it. Sometimes I think the word thought leadership like has a connotation of fluffy and, you know, something that's not going to drive demand. And I think in services, it does drive demand. It creates brand, better brand. It creates pricing, you know, better pricing for things. And so I think part of it is just call it part of the demand program, maybe not separate it out. And then a big piece of it is just leverage the heck out of it where you can. If you're going to do a big investment into research, for example, you know, create some campaigns around it, figure out how to attach it to an event that you're doing. There's always services companies tend to be fairly event driven, I think. And so if you can kind of tie it into something that's already getting a fair amount of attention and spend from the sales team, it helps a lot. And it also helps to drive usage of the thought leadership as well, which I think is, you know, is half the battle, is getting sales teams to actually use it with clients in lots of different ways.
So how do you guide them to gauge the effectiveness or the return on their investment if they're kind of strapping to piece things together and, like you said, maybe don't have the big budget to do so? How do you advise them to really understand that perhaps maybe you can command premium pricing and gain recognition for your ability to solve client problems by investing in thought leadership?
Yeah, again, it's hard, especially because a lot of the, you know, people who own the budget sometimes haven't come from the background to see that it actually works. So part of it is just proving it out, you know, start small and show that it does start to have an impact, I think is one big thing. I think the other, and, you know, this is where just marketing in general, I think has to figure out how to sell this, is that in services, especially complex B2B services, which with have really big buying committees, it's multi-touch. You know, you're not going to be able to say this report created this $1 million project. Like, it's going to have so many conversations. Partners are going to be involved, both partners inside the services firm, as well as, you know, partners, your technology partners in a lot of cases. So I think trying to do direct correlation, maybe tracking influence is part of it. Like, did they download that report? Did they click on that social media post without trying to claim credit for it? Because as soon as you try to, I mean, I'm sure you've been there, right? You've been inside companies. Once you try to claim credit for something, then everybody wants to argue against it.
So, you know, trying to show influence is not easy. I grant you that. But are there other ways of showing the value? For instance, you do research that perhaps maybe offers you the opportunity to build out a new service line or to think in more innovative ways of serving your client. And maybe that doesn't have a direct impact on revenue near term, but longer term it positions you not only to be a thought leader, but perhaps to have the advantage, a first mover advantage in the marketplace. Is that something that you can convey and will be accepted by companies in the IT services space as being something worth doing with thought leadership?
I think that's probably easier than the correlation of direct sales, to be honest, just because if you can do research that's going to create a service line, you can easily track that, you know, in your systems, that if you're going to sell this service line, you can see that there's a direct correlation to that. I think it's where it's part of your everyday conversations, but it shows that you're smarter than the average bear. Then that's where it starts to be harder. I think figuring out to how to work it into having sales tell you what works and what doesn't, what's helpful, what's not helpful. They're direct revenue generators. And so if they're users and believers in the thought leadership that's being used out there, then that's going to go a long way in convincing executives to invest in it down the road.
Is there anything particularly interesting or different about early stage companies that have outside investors, be they VC or private equity, that either creates challenges or opens new opportunities to using thought leadership? Is it different for those emerging companies than it is for the more established vendors and service providers?
Other than just the fact that they don't have as many resources?
Yeah.
I know that it's, maybe it's a little bit harder just because, you know, there's a smaller pool to go around. And so you have to fight for every dollar.
And you would think also that thought leadership is an easier way to kind of get established as being a leader in your space. If you can, as you point out, merchandise it and market it well.
I'm always surprised, honestly, because I mean, as an investor, like we look at companies and their thought leadership. We might not call it thought leadership when we're evaluating it within a, you know, if we're going through evaluation for investments, we might call it differentiation or what's their unique point of view. But I mean, there is a, it's very easy to see if you have great thought leadership, you probably have good leadership internally. You have great talent. You have a strong differentiated point of view on things. And so it's hard for me to have investors not see that.
Understood, yeah. Tech services, particularly those related to the cloud, are expected to account for more and more of total IT spend this year. No wonder why Terracera set its sights on this sector years ago. Gartner projects total worldwide IT expenditures will grow 6.8% this year to just under $5 trillion. The IT services segment is expected to account for $1 trillion of the total, growing 8.7% from 2023. And for the first time, services will comprise the largest segment of IT spending. IT consulting is projected to grow 10 to 15% in 2024 across nearly every industry segment. And cloud spending is expected to comprise a good chunk of the total expenditures in these categories. Terracera expects cloud-related spending to reach nearly $1 trillion by 2030. And if true, that bodes well for Terracera and its portfolio companies. Given the amount of money at stake, it's clear why Terracera and its portfolio companies are paying so much attention to producing quality thought leadership. For young firms in an emerging hot market, establishing brand and gaining recognition for their expertise is essential. They can't nor should they leave anything to chance, particularly amid a transition from the second to the third wave of cloud computing. We've spoken to a few of Terracera's portfolio companies. They are serious about the role thought leadership plays in advancing their business, both in terms of market recognition and growth. Well, why don't we talk a little bit about what's going on in the cloud services space? So Terracera talks a lot about the role consulting and managed services firms will play in bringing this third wave of cloud computing to life. What are your portfolio companies doing vis-a-vis thought leadership to demonstrate their expertise, to drive revenue, to create brand awareness? Is there anything in particular you can point out that is really kind of the heart of what they're trying to do from a thought leadership perspective?
Yeah, I think it might help too to kind of talk a little bit about what we mean by the third wave, which, I mean, it's basically just saying that there are different generations of technology that happen all the time. And, you know, we have pinned ourselves on the start of cloud adoption, which, you know, started in the early 2000s. There's different phases of that. And as these new types of technology come to pass, you need different types of partners to help you guide through that. And so, you know, that happened with the cloud in the third wave, you know, that really got accelerated with COVID in early 2020, you know, in the 2020. And now with AI, it's just exacerbated it. And I say that because I think that when it comes to thought leadership for these services firms that want to be a leader in this next generation of technology, they have to show how they are doing things differently internally using a lot of these technologies. So if you're out, if you're out talking about AI and you aren't doing things with AI internally and marketing that and talking about the research that you're doing about where AI is making a difference and where it's not making a difference, no one's going to believe that you're a leader in that technology. So I think that's probably the biggest thing is you have to prove that you know what you're talking about. And the best way to do that is through thought leadership. I think there's a couple examples I can give you of some of our portfolio companies doing some interesting things.
If you could, before you get there, though, the proof points in terms of case studies or best case examples that reinforce or demonstrate the point of your thought leadership, that it's tangible, that it's real, that the benefits are achievable, seen through the eyes of a client or a company out in the space who may look a lot like or feel a lot like a company you're trying to influence or sell to. So the role of case studies in this regard, I would assume, is very important, particularly to the younger companies, to establish credibility.
Huge. I mean, I think that's the number one thing every buyer of services looks for is like, have you done this before for someone in my space? who has the same problems that I do. And if you have, and you can show that you've helped this other person, I mean, you're so far down the sales cycle at that point in time. It's amazing to me that more companies don't put more work in their case studies and their use cases and examples and figure out how to make those really come to life. And it's more than, you know, someone sitting and doing a video saying like how amazing a services company is.
It's not a testimonial. Exactly. It's not a testimonial.
Exactly. And I mean, I think on the testimonial versus reality, True Thought Leadership talks about the problems, like not everything goes great. And so not that you want to scare everybody, but you have to be honest with what a customer is going to face as they start going down some of these paths.
It's all about verisimilitude. If you can show them that you've got their best interest at heart, that you're not perfect, but you're trying hard to solve the problems in front of you that are the deepest, darkest ones for your client, they may take a flyer with you. They may say, hey, you're worth working with because you're real. You're relatable.
Yeah. Well, especially now that everybody's creating their own content with AI, everybody's going to sound the same.
Well, we'll get to that a little bit later. But yeah. So tell me, so what are the more interesting things your portfolio companies are doing with thought leadership that you see as best practice?
Yeah, I think I'll give you two examples. One is a company called Hakoda, which is a data consultancy. They're a big partner of Snowflake and a bunch of the different data ISVs, which I think you might have talked to them at some point. They're doing a lot of traditional thought leadership research projects where they're going in and talking about what's the state of data adoption, what's the complexity around it, what are people challenged with, but they're really bringing it to life in different ways, which I think is something that as there's more content out there, AI is going to make this worse. Like, how do you truly stand out with your thought leadership? And part of it is the presentation of it. And so they do a lot of interactive, you know, it's not just download a PDF, here's your report. They do a lot of interactive stuff with it. They have an assessment around it that kind of feeds some of the data that they've collected through their research and says where they benchmark, where they stand compared to some of the other folks out there.
Those gap assessments are really good and they're really great thought leadership tools as well as thought leadership supporting lead gen. I mean, I think that it's very helpful to really show the client that here, if you do this small little evaluation, you get a sense of where your issues are. And then, you know, contact us if you want to learn how to solve this. I mean, I think it's a great straight through approach to showing thought leadership and how you can solve client problems. So yeah, I agree with you.
Which is huge for small companies that have small budgets, right? Like you have to figure out how to tie it all together. You can't just be thought leadership in this ivory tower. It's got to tie back to some kind of results. So that's one. And I think they've seen huge success. And it's interesting, like now even Snowflake, who's one of their biggest partners, like their sales team is using their data journey that they've created based on this research. So
that's a turn of events because I was going to ask you this question that it seems to me a lot of IT services companies basically are just mouthpieces for their software vendor, software as a service partners, that they just toe the line because they want to sell more of their partners' software as a service. So they don't really spend a lot of time thinking uniquely about the value proposition or the difference that they bring to the engagement. It's more or less, well, we're kind of doing the vendor's bidding for them, so to speak.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that is one of the things where we see companies that are the best partners out there, that are growing the fastest, that are the most in demand, are those that have an opinion, that have a point of view related to what the partner is doing, you know, the ISV. It's got to be related to it to some extent, but the services companies need to bring leads and relationships to these software partners too. And so they've got to have their own muscle in that realm. They can't just use all the content that their partner gives them. Then they'll sound like everybody else.
And what then is the second example you wanted to?
So the second one I would say is Orium, which is it's a consultancy in the composable commerce space. So
you want to explain what that is? Because that may be a leap for a lot of the viewers today.
It is. Yeah. So composable commerce is, you know, there's the traditional commerce stacks out there. Think like the Salesforce, the Adobes, where, you know, if you're a retailer and you want to go put your wares on the internet and you also have an in-store, you know, presence, then you would use these big kind of monolithic stacks. Composable commerce is, hey, things are moving so fast. Customer buying patterns are changing so much. Technology is changing so much that I'm going to take a best of breed approach and put together all these different tools and architect it in a way where I can swap them out as things change. So I'm not stuck with this stack that I can't change and I've got to wait until they upgrade every, you know, year. But it is a new thing. It's a new concept. It's a different type of architecture. It requires a little bit of a leap of faith. So there's a lot of education, which is ripe for thought leadership. And so Orium has really built a name for themselves as probably the biggest and best composable commerce consultancy in North America, partly by owning the education around this space. So they actually own their own kind of media site, which is composable.com, sponsored by Orium. And they have an entire editorial team that is dedicated to putting out masterclasses, articles, blogs, interviews. They go to the shows, they talk to the vendors. And I think especially with a lot of the changes you see in journalism, more and more companies are starting to own their own media. Even venture capitalists are doing the same.
There's a crisis of confidence. Both of us being recovering journalists can attest to that. You see what's going on out there. It's kind of scary. But let me ask you this question, because these lightly branded websites have been out there for a while. I know HP did one for a while and other vendors have tried doing it. Cognizant, we tried to do it as well. And it's sometimes very hard to then tie it back to the brand and to get the brand lift and the lead generation that you're looking for, because you're trying real hard to be objective and not overly salesy and promotional. Has Orium kind of solved for that?
Yeah, it's tricky too, because you don't want to, I mean, there are technically ways that you can pull, there's lots of tools out there now, and you can pull people's information. You can see who's going to those sites, and then you can start sending them your own marketing messages, but then nobody goes to the site. People distrust you. Like, they're going specifically not to get sold to, they want to learn. So I think you have to be a little bit careful about it, but there are ways to kind of leverage some of the data if you want to. So for example, on this composable site that they have, like there's an open source tool within that that they can actually kind of play with some of the things. And so composable commerce is a highly technical piece. And they know that if they can get developers playing with some of these open source tools out there, and it's not just Orium's, there's other things as well, that they're going to create advocates inside their companies, but you can see which companies are playing with it. And so if someone does come to, say, Orium's website down the road, and you know that they've played with this tool, you're going to give them a lot more attention than you probably are this cold lead that's never going to do anything. So I think there are ways. You just have to be careful with it. And then, I mean, the other thing that's, I think, interesting, and this kind of goes to your other question about how do you, if you have really tight budgets, how do you get more out of it? Orium actually partners with all of their technology partners for that media site. And so they partner up with Commerce Tools, with Vercel, with BigCommerce, with, you know, some of these other ISVs out there to help with content. And so there's a little bit of a brand tie-up too. Mm-hmm. So if someone's looking for a Commerce Tools partner and they're on that site, and so is Orium, again, it's going to help with the brand.
So you guys, I mean, and you in particular, I know, provide a lot of strategic guidance on thought leadership and best practices to your portfolio companies. In fact, spoke to Orium about that, and they were just so happy to have you as a guiding light in this regard. So can you explain how you do that? I mean, you want to be involved. You want to be somewhat connected to what they're doing because you guys have a vested interest. You've invested in the company. But you don't want to be overly controlling and ultimately dictatorial. You want to try to help them to help themselves, but it's a fine line sometimes. Can you explain how you do that?
It is a fine line, especially when you're really passionate about something. So I think part of it is you have to let them pull you into it. And so if you are overly dictatorial or force your opinion on things, you have to ask questions. I mean, this is something I've learned moving from an operator to a board member. It's a very different skill set of question asking, one that I'm still working on, to be candid. But I think the other thing too is just inspiration is we have 7 portfolio companies at Tercera. They are all in different spaces, but they're all in IT services. So they're solving the same problems for each other, or solving the same problems, but in different spaces. So if one of our portfolio companies is doing something super cool on the thought leadership side, I'm going to share that with everybody else, of course, with their permission, but just to show kind of what else is out there, because sometimes companies just need inspiration. And then I think the other one is challenging them. So if they're putting something out that is Me Too, doesn't really seem worthy of their brand, I think it's my job as the outside person to challenge them a little bit on it and say, you can do better.
Interesting. So putting what you just said into the context of how you ask questions and not try to be dictatorial, and the reference that you made earlier that a lot of people who are founders or the smart people behind these IT services companies aren't best storytellers or are more passionate about the technology and the business than in supporting it through marketing. Founders and these real smart people, these companies are obviously very busy and sometimes can be, at least in my experience, somewhat self-centered and reluctant to speak out. How do you convince them to make time for thought leadership? And, you know, you can make the case when you do it right, it can be time consuming, but it's highly effective marketing endeavor. It's probably more cost effective than sponsorships or advertising or something that's a more high ticket item.
Yeah, I think it depends on the executive too, because people are hesitant to do it for different reasons. I think there are some people who are just shy, right? Like they're technologists. They like to be behind the scenes. They don't want to be the one standing up on stage. And, you know, maybe there are fewer of these, but in that case, I think it's just showing them that there are ways to put thought leadership out and for them to be a little bit of a face for the company where they're supported. So they don't have, you know, it can be a video instead of them standing up on stage and presenting it. You can pair a writer with them versus them having time to kind of go off and do it on their own. I think that's one of them. The other one is that I don't have time for this. Other things are more important. And that's a little bit harder. I think if you can show them that it gives them scale. So they obviously, they're a leader of a company. If the company is doing well, they clearly have a good opinion on something. Showing how thought leadership and some of the marketing support behind it can help provide more scale for their opinions and what they have out there, I think that helps sometimes too. And then there's some people who just will never get it.
No, absolutely. Do you have any examples, anything that you can point to where you were able to turn somebody from being hesitant about either making the investment or about being the face of the thought leadership and how and why it worked? Is there anything in particular that you can point to help others out there that are facing a similar dilemma?
Yeah, probably not in our portfolio companies. I mean, I think we only have 7 investments. We've been around for 4 years. And so we're pretty choosy on who we work with. And so I think most of the people we work with understand.
How about your past history in marketing communications at either tech or tech services companies?
Yeah, I think, there's a couple examples there. I think one of the biggest ones is just around, which you might laugh at this because you've been around long as long as I have, is the executive platform, like the executive thought leadership. And it's funny, I feel like that's gone away a little bit as, you know, companies have kind of taken on their brands. But I wonder if maybe we're even going to pivot back a little bit more to that as AI takes over. But I think it's convincing your executive or the person who has an opinion, well, we're going to make this thought leadership about your brand because your brand's going to give lift to our brand, but it's also going to help your career, you. And, you know, there's usually a little bit of an ego with some of these executives. And so if you can show how you're going to give life to some of their point of view, their thoughts, and make it about them, that's going to give lift to the company as well. That helps.
Well, why don't we segue now to high finance? And we've been studying thought leadership across numerous markets, and we looked at it in terms of the venture capital and private equity spaces. And we see a lot of firms producing reports, white papers, blogs, podcasts, videos that really serve to bolster their eminence in the market segments that they underwrite. So how critical is thought leadership in high finance, and then in particular to Tercera?
I think it's just as important as it is for the services companies, it is for investors. I mean, it's hard to stand apart in venture. I mean, everybody's got really smart people. Everybody's got lots of money. And so how do you ensure companies want to work with you? Because they can get money in lots of different places these days. I mean, thought leadership is a big piece of that. Like our Tercera 30, which is probably one of our biggest pillars of thought leadership, which is basically what are the, 30 ISV ecosystems that are great for building a services business around. I don't think that we would have been as successful as we are had we not put something like that out, because we get a lot of inbound from not just founders, but the ISVs themselves, people who, even analysts, you know, we have some data that they don't have. So I do think it's really important. And I can see why more and more investors are starting to go down that path.
Talk a little bit about the genesis of the Tercera 30 and how it's evolved over time.
Yeah. So it was one of the things we said from the get-go that we wanted to do. And I think we took inspiration from something that Bessemer Partners does, which is a really big VC firm. They did with the Cloud 100, which is, you know, what are the biggest cloud players out there at the beginning of cloud? And, you know, we kind of grew up in that era too. And that, I mean, that took on a life of its own. Now it's sponsored by, I think, Forbes or Fortune and Salesforce. And there's like a market index associated with it. So, but you can see how it grew over time, and it really put Bessemer on the map when it came to cloud investing. We wanted to do the same thing for services. I mean, we 100% focus on IT services. And so how could we look at the market in a way that would benefit both how we think about investing, but also how our investments think about their investments, their expansion areas? We wanted something that would benefit us, our portfolio companies, but also put us on the map. And so that's kind of where the Tercera 30 came to be. It's definitely evolved over the last few years, and I'm sure we'll continue evolving.
And how do you justify the time, effort, and money, of course, that you invest in this? It's wonderful. You guys do a great job with it. I'm impressed. I'm cynical and skeptical sometimes, but
thank you.
I look at it and I say, wow, this is really well thought through. It's well produced. It's easy on the eye. It supports your mission, and it's very helpful to your portfolio companies, of course, without being obviously preferential. So how do you measure the impact?
I think the measuring the impact's the traditional ways that we talked about. You know, is it driving people to us? Is it getting us into conversations that we wouldn't have otherwise, which it's definitely doing that. I think there's a little bit of the anecdotal as well. I mean, when you hear someone say, I have the Tercera 30 on my wall and I look at it, which we heard in a conversation, which, I mean, obviously makes my day as our CMO, but you know, you can't measure that. That's tough to measure. So I think there's a little bit of trust that has to come with it. But I also, in terms of the impact, I think the impact for great thought leadership builds over time too. So you know, we know that in 10 years, this thing is going to be, if we keep investing it, we keep evolving it, we make sure that it is valuable to us, our portfolio companies, and the market at large, we know that it's going to pay dividends down the road. We've just seen it happen in our own services companies that we've been part of. So part of it is a little bit of trust.
So it's a mixture of soft and hard measures. Mm-hmm. And it's dedication, because you know it's the right thing to do, and the impact will evolve and hopefully accumulate over time. And you're better off for having done it than having not done it.
Yeah. And your point there too is the executive sponsorship of thought leadership is really critical too. I mean, this was an idea that the partners all were behind from the very beginning. And I think, you know, when people who are thinking about thought leadership investments, you got to get the executives behind it. Sometimes it's a journey. Not everyone's going to get behind it right away. That's just why you've got to like kind of bring them along, show them a little bit of the impact before you make the, you know, $50,000 investment, $200,000 investment. But that sponsorship makes a big difference.
With Rattleback and Furnisas Partners, we studied how thought leadership is valued and used across a variety of sectors, including high finance. We looked at this both from a consumer of thought leadership perspective, as well as from a producer of thought leadership point of view. When it comes to thought leadership produced by venture capital and private equity firms, executives who have consumed it found it highly valuable. In fact, 85% of respondents who consume thought leadership content produced by venture capital firms and 84% of respondents who consume thought leadership assets produced by private equity firms found these assets of extremely high or high value. However, these assets could be put to better use. For instance, 20% of the 5,700 plus executives who we polled said they used thought leadership from PE and VC companies before deciding which firms to use. This ranked at the bottom of the 9 market segments we studied. Yet, we are optimistic that this will change. We've seen many firms in the high finance space continue to produce empirically sound thought leadership. Moreover, since these firms are well-capitalized, they tend to produce thought leadership with high production values. One firm whose thought leadership I subscribe to is Bessemer Venture Partners. They deliver a steady diet of timely insights and market trends and anticipated developments across the high-tech space. In fact, Tessera based its Tessera 30 on Bessemer's Cloud 100. Populating websites with contextually relevant thought leadership content that plays off of a product or a service offering is a best practice for driving revenue and recognition of a firm's expertise in high finance and beyond. So why don't we look a little bit over the horizon? Where do you think thought leadership is heading overall? Where is it heading in the tech services space and in cloud services in particular? And what do you think companies need to do to stay out ahead of it so that they can use it to burnish their brand and drive recognition and revenue?
I think AI is going to help and hurt in lots of different ways. I think that it's going to be a lot easier to produce mediocre content. So people are going to put out a lot of mediocre content, which is good for the people who actually put some thought into it and try to be different and really understand what the audience wants to hear, what's differentiating, what's really going to kind of drive value. But it's going to be harder to get found. And so I think that's where owning your own media, for example, is probably going to become more important. I think the executive thought leadership, because a lot of these leaders out there, even at smaller companies, you know, in services, like you have a 200-person services company, you've got 200 brand advocates out there. So how do you make them inspired to share your content, your thought leadership out there and arm them? I think people are the new, you know, they're the influencers. I think they're going to become more and more important because the trust is going to be more in the people than just what's out on the internet.
No, for sure. I mean, I think generative AI is going to help to accelerate the process in terms of finding the right data, finding the supporting facts and figures, maybe even pressure testing the point of view to see if it hangs together, maybe helping with the writing. But like with most things, you can't outsource everything. You can't outsource thinking. There has to be the creative spark and the ingenuity and the human nature of working with clients and solving problems that machine intelligence just isn't there yet. It maybe eventually will get there, but it's not quite there. And companies shouldn't use it as a crutch or a shortcut, but use it as a productivity multiplier. That's my view.
Yeah. I wish I could remember because I feel like I've said this quote a lot and I don't know who to attribute it to, but someone said, think of AI as a coworker, information hoarding coworker that is extraordinarily helpful, but also can sometimes lead you in the wrong direction. So I think that with you are going to use, and you, because everybody else is going to, so you have to start thinking about how you use AI within the creation of this too. But especially in the near term, you got to think about, it's not always right now. And so if you trust too much in it, it could lead, and you're saying that this is your point of view on things, it can lead you sometimes in directions that are bad.
Yeah, no, I agree with you there. You know, trust and verify, I guess, is the right approach here. But at the same time, you know, my sense is that, you know, technology evolves. It's going to improve. There are going to be fewer hallucinations and fewer fabrications. So it's going to be part of the arsenal for sure. You know, I just think it has to be used wisely and in ways that are responsible. And, you know, I've heard stories, and I won't mention names, of companies saying, you know, we've got to have this report generated by next week because we have a very important meeting with a client, and they send it over to their large language model of choice and start putting something together, and they pass it off as their own. And that's a scary proposition in my view.
Yeah, it is.
I just hope that that's not where we land. Last question about the future of thought leadership. Do you see any new techniques, new ways of telling stories, new ways of collecting data, new ways of influencing people through campaigns that you think are going to emerge in the near term? And you know, AI may be part of that as well.
I mean, we've talked about AI a lot, so I won't talk much. I mean, I do think that's going to have probably the biggest influence is how do you create your own even small language model out of your own content. We're even thinking about that for the Tessera 30. We have so much data, like how do we use it in a way for the Tessera 30? So I think thinking about that is one thing. It is the, like, how do you package it, elevate it in a way that is easy to consume? Like the days of the 50-page PDF are just, they're gone. I mean, I think you can have a 50-page PDF for the people like me who still love to print things and read them. Yeah. But you need the interactive pieces. You need the videos. You need, you know, the ones for the TikTok generation, the short attention spans, which is a whole different subject. But it's the, I think there's going to be probably more thought put into the packaging and how to get found for things. I think research, it'll be interesting to see how research evolves, because I think, you know, there's good research, there's bad research. There's just so much data out there. You can find a data point to tell any story that you want.
True.
So how do you get data that is real, that is valuable, and actually helps you make different decisions that are going to have better outcomes?
And to me, that's extremely important, because we live in somewhat of a fact light world these days. And, you know, I always say people are entitled to their opinions, but the facts are the facts. So,
yeah,
let's leave it there. I really appreciate your time and your insight. This has been great. Thank you so much for joining us today on Everything Thought Leadership.
Thanks for having me on. This was great.
Our research and standard eye test reveals that IT services struggle with thought leadership. But Michelle is working overtime to make sure her portfolio companies are the exception to the rule. The sad truth is that most IT services companies, unlike tech product companies, claim to not have large enough marketing budgets to produce quality thought leadership. That may be partially true, but most don't devote enough time, nor do they apportion their marketing budgets to accommodate quality thought leadership, at least in our experience. This is odd, as Michelle noted, given the pedigree of the founders at most IT services companies. They come from consulting backgrounds. And even if they acknowledge the role of thought leadership, they want their smart people to be selling, not spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about and producing big think pieces. They see thought leadership as a nice to have, something that may drive name recognition for the authors and the firm, but not revenue, at least in the short term. Well, in our view, they couldn't be more wrong. Our research and experience shows that companies that demonstrate their problem-solving expertise through thought leadership are more apt to win business. And for small companies, particularly emerging cloud services companies, thought leadership is indispensable. In fact, it can be make or break in terms of getting heard above the din and securing requisite financing. Michelle made clear that when Tercera evaluates investment targets, it assesses their thought leadership, among other attributes, before making a yay or nay investment decision. And once a company enters Tercera's portfolio, Michelle helps their leaders to develop meaningful thought leadership. This means asking lots of questions, challenging them to think harder, or inspiring them to think more clearly and effectively about POVs that convey their expertise in market segments they need or want to own. She often shares thought leadership strategies that worked previously in similar circumstances over her career or at another portfolio company. And in her role as Tercera's CMO, she pushes the envelope with reports such as the Tercera 30. Michelle's motto with the Tercera 30 is that it will keep evolving as market trends dictate. And the Tercera 30 is working as expected. It gets the firm into conversations that it wouldn't normally have had, which not only bolsters Tercera's credential as a leading cloud services financier and advisor, but builds trust across the IT services ecosystem. Well, that's all the time we have today. Thanks for joining us on Everything Thought Leadership. We look forward to seeing you here again soon. If you enjoyed this episode, we'd love it if you'd left a like and share this episode with your colleagues. Everything Thought Leadership is a video and podcast series from Boudet TLP for thought leaders and thought leadership professionals, the people who help experts get recognized as thought leaders. You can find out more about Boudet TLP at boudettlp.com.